Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another round of the Best of SDHAM from the SDH Network. Soccer down here. Thanks for hanging out with us here at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. John Nelson here with you. And for those unfamiliar, it is the Best of SDHAM. SDHAM is the morning show that runs on the Soccer Down Here Network, the SDH Network, roughly from 9:05 a.m. Eastern Time until 11:05, and usually beyond 11:05. So it's usually Monday through Friday, 2 hours plus, where we kind of get your day set up on the SDH Network with guests and pundits and opinions and highlights and stats and schedules and what to watch, where to watch it, and how to watch it. All those things in one place on SDHAM, on SDH Network social media platforms. It's live on YouTube, live on Twitch, live on the 280-character app, and available as a podcast later on in its own form after the morning show itself is completed. And then you get your guest segments that are chopped up as well, and you can listen to those individually, or you can go back and listen to the entire broadcast on its own on your favorite podcatcher. This week, we get you ready for Atlanta United and their road trip down to Inter Miami. And it is a makeup game situation for Inter Miami, and there was going into the final decisions at the end of the week, there was a bit of wonder as to whether or not Lionel Messi would actually be there with his club in Argentina as the Argentine national team was going through some friendlies in this international window, or would he, with the friendlies first starting off in Fort Lauderdale and Chicago and then shifted from Fort Lauderdale to Fort Lauderdale, would there be an opportunity for Lionel Messi to be there to represent country in a more of an ambassadorial way than anything else, and then be able to participate with his team as they are chasing after the highest playoff spot possible in the Eastern Conference in Major League Soccer. So we discussed that with a couple of guests. Steve Cangelosi, who's going to be calling the match for Apple TV, and got his thoughts on the season involving Atlanta United, got his thoughts on the matchup involving Inter Miami, and what it could be like going up against that group in Fort Lauderdale, possibly with Messi going back in the lineup. What would it look for Atlanta United? All of those questions coming up with Steve Cangelosi in just a little bit. Also, on the board, we go to the Miami Herald and catch up with their legendary sports writer, Michelle Kaufman, to get her thoughts on the season and the gaps and the things that, if you are a fan of the Herons, what you should be worried about come the postseason and what it was going to be looking like this weekend. No one was really sure until very, very late Friday night what was going on with the roster for Javier Mascherano. So we'll catch up with Kanji, we catch up with Michelle Kaufman, and we also go to Albany State University as a part of one of the other programs here on the SDH Network, the Red Clay Soccer Report. That is an opportunity for us to look at the rest of the footprint when it comes to all of the schools that are outside the individual programming that we do on a daily basis. And so we get to catch up with Jared Bichamp and find out what's going on at Albany State as they are in the Peach Belt Conference in Division II as an HBCU. So we get into that. We get into the growth of the program, what it's been like for him to continue to advance the program along with Michael Langston and first-year assistant Riley Bain. So we get to catch up with Coach Bishop as well and find out what's going on in the Peach Belt and at Albany State. But first and foremost, once again, as we always do, we try to give you opposition research as best we can when it comes to Atlanta United and their matchups coming up. So we decided to consult with Steve Cangelosi, one of the voices of Apple TV+. He's calling the match this weekend. Here's our conversation on SDHAM. Like I said, when we have these premieres, I wish I had like serpentina or confetti cannons or, you know, trumpet fanfares, you know, with the dudes that are dressed like the Renaissance Fair and they have like the really long trumpet with the flag underneath it. You sit there and you have the big to do, like the row of like 20 of them. You have the red carpet and everything. We don't have that. But what we do have is Steve Cangelosi. And Steve is coming in for the first time here on the morning show. And Steve, I'm sorry I don't have the trumpet fanfare for you, but welcome to the morning show.
John, after all of that, I feel underdressed now. Why did you have to do that? That's fantastic.
Dude, yeah. I'm in my San Marino national team sweatshirt. I mean, look, it was either that or the Andorra jersey this morning. So that was how I was going to lay things out for you. My first question for you is, did Danny warn you about what you were getting into?
No, but I did listen to his wonderful premiere several weeks ago when I was on a treadmill in a city that off the top of my head, I can't remember because I've been just about everywhere.
They all run together, brother, I know.
But it was insightful. I think both of you hit a lot of the right notes, and I know this is not easy, okay? I know what it's like to be in a market where you're primarily focusing on one team. And I was blessed for the longest time doing those New York Red Bulls games all those years because they rarely played a meaningless game, right? The streak is finally over. They're not going to the playoffs. But what that meant was every game had some tangible significance for the longest time.
Yep.
But, John, you're sitting on a 5-win season in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I do remember the 5-win season that the Red Bulls endured just before they started this streak. And it was brutal at times. I kind of feel for you. I get it.
Yeah, that our fan base and our folks in the Twitch pitch that have conversations with us on a daily basis. When we have Reaction Monday, I always say that it is an over, under, or an on par reaction. And a lot of times it is folks that are venting their spleens, as they should.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get into all of the process and everything, and you have folks that are wondering about wooden spoons, and I'm saying just go ahead and close that door, just close that drawer in the kitchen, don't worry about it, just focus on what's going on. I would maintain that there have been some bright spots in this season for Atlanta United. You've got a lot of turnover, you're trying to get adjusted to the new guys and how they're trying to orient to Ronnie Dial and everything. There are building blocks here that you can take from this season, no matter how frustrating it has been for Atlanta United and for the 17th.
And none of these times when you miss and the season is obviously a grave disappointment ever has to be a long-term thing, right? LA Galaxy missed the playoffs before winning MLS Cup. The Seattle Sounders, the one time they missed in their history, came back to be a fortified team that's done some historic things in this league since missing. Those things are real. And if you believe in the talent and you believe in the infrastructure that Garth and Chris down there are setting, and I'll extend that to Ronnie Dial only because the confidence still seems to be exuded from the front office about the job they believe he will eventually get done, this doesn't have to be long-term misery. Now, with all of that said, it's funny. I had an interesting talk yesterday with the assistant coach down in Atlanta, Kenny Miller, and he was telling us about a moment earlier this season. They're playing Miami Saturday night. There was a moment earlier this year where he looked at the expected goals of Atlanta United and Inter Miami side by side. And it was practically identical, John. One of them, I think, was 30.9 and the other was 30.8. And then he looked at the actual goals scored. Mm-hmm. Atlanta 24 and Miami had 50. So what does that tell you? Some things are being done in the buildup and some things are not being done in the most crucial area of the field, in the box. Is that fixable with the group they have? I think so. I just think they need a long, cold winter to set in and kind of figure their way out of this because I do think they're talented enough to do that.
Yeah, you do have you did have moments early in the season where you had basically, you know, bumper cars on the right hand side. It literally, it was like bumper cars, like when we go to Six Flags and we're growing up. It's like you're sitting there and you're just smashing these cars. They're all in the same space and you're trying to get away from it so you can continue to spin and go around other folks. But you literally, you had bumper cars on the right hand side. You try to do things with personnel and shifting them from the left and the right and all those kinds of things. Your car crashes are less. And now it just comes down to being clinical and finishing those opportunities and making sure that defenses don't slant and sit there and, you know, force all of that pressure. If you're stacked to one side, they know that they can lean on you. And unless you get that big switch and free things up, then you're kind of pinned in. And that's what defenses can do in a situation like this.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that falls on the coach. That has to be sorted out, I think, at the highest level of those people running the technical operations. And Ronnie Dyla has to figure this out. I do know he's tried different combinations. He's tried different tactical formations, and very little of that has worked. What's mystifying to me is the return of Miguel Almiron to this team. And here we are with two games left in the season. He's obviously not going to play tomorrow night because he's going to be with Paraguay this week.
Right.
But it seems to me, the view from 30,000 feet, you've been connected to the team all season long, that 32 games into this, nobody's really figured out the best way to make this second time around for him a success. And I think that's something of a worrisome thing. I don't care about the price tag to bring him back.
Right.
That's on the team. They wanted to do it. He's still a good player. He's probably going to play at the World Cup next summer. But to me, that needed to be an impactful signing. And the grade on that at this point in the year, what would you give it? If I said C+, am I in the right ballpark?
I was going to say a 75 that you couldn't dance to, probably, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's worrisome. Now, what do you want to make out of these final two games? You're going back to the scene of the crime last year. Mm-hmm. Inter Miami fans will tell you that. And since the 2018 MLS Cup, I don't know that the club had a prouder moment than game three of the playoffs last year.
Yep.
That was everything you wanted your team to be in a composite 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was the old pro turning back the clock in Brad Guzan, who had a lot to do with them getting as far as they did. And of course, makes that one final save at the end, which is the stuff of legends. It was brushing off a game-tying goal by the greatest player of all time and finding a way to stick another one in and valiant defending at the end. And you think about where we've come since that point, John. Five wins since that. If you want to count the one meaningless victory towards the end of League's Cup, okay, it's six. Five wins since that night. And you talk about going off a cliff. And that's what this team has done. And here we are 5 minutes into this conversation, and we have not referenced the name Emmanuel Latte Lott yet. I'm not sure when and where you want to go. If that's where you go now, we will.
Well, I mean, I'll put an index card in Latte Lott, and we'll put him to the side.
Okay, shove him to the side. Great.
Because that has also been one of the sticking points for a lot of folks this year, and Latte Lott being on an island. I said I was going to put an index card there, and I am. Okay. How many games this season have you and Danny called Messi and Friends matches? 72, 72?
You know what? If you gave me a minute, I'm not going to do this to you while we're live. I could probably have the exact chart right behind me, but I think this is going to be like 21 or something like that in all competitions, if you include the League's Cup as well. So we have a little bit of a handle on how they play by now. Let's put it that way. Now, we are sitting here just after the 10 a.m. hour on a Friday morning, and I cannot tell you definitively. As a matter of fact, as soon as I disconnect on this interview with you, I have a call with Javier Mascherano that I will address, and maybe or maybe he will not provide some clarity on whether or not Lionel Messi and Rodrigo De Paul will play tomorrow night. I can tell you this. They have been training in South Florida, not with club, but with country all week long. Yeah. Is Lionel Messi the kind of player who can be detached from his team for 4.5 days, show up tomorrow night and walk into the building at 5:30 and still pull four assists on you? Of course he is. We all know that. But let's just say the preparation for Inter Miami is not what it is accustomed to be. Now, we'll get some clarity on this tonight. What I think is fascinating is if he shows up tonight and plays 20 minutes against Venezuela and then somehow says, give me 45 minutes tomorrow night and let's worry about Monday night for my country tomorrow. All of this is possible. You see, Philadelphia has won the Supporters' Shield, John, but to me, it's a big game for Inter Miami still. To me, there's a very big difference between finishing second in the Eastern Conference table and, let's say, third, fourth, or fifth, okay? Look, I'm not going to project playoff matchups. It's stupid for anyone to do that. This is not a league where you're smart if you start to say this team's going to face this team in a conference final or a conference semifinal. But just for the sake of this conversation, let's say Inter Miami's looking at having to get through Cincinnati to get to MLS Cup, okay? You don't want that game at TQL Stadium.
You want it at the Erector Set. That's what you want.
You don't want that game at TQL Stadium. It happened once, and you got your head handed to you earlier this year, okay? They're well coached, and I'll just say it. I think Pat Noonan's a much better coach than Javier Mascherano, okay? He is. And part of that is Javier being thrown into this situation. He had never coached professionals before. He coached the U-20s, coached the Olympic team. Yep. And here he is, I think, just trying not on so many occasions to just drive the train off the tracks, okay? He's the one that said this. I'm not putting words in his mouth. At a time earlier this year where they were struggling a little bit to find their way, he wasn't defensive about it. He was just speaking reality. What am I going to tell Luis Suarez about how to score goals? What am I going to tell Jordi Alba about how to play left back? What? Tell me. And all of that makes sense. But there's an element, I think, of tying together all of that talent that still has not been fully realized. And I still think they're a team, John, as we approach the second full season of Messi and friends together, that still finds itself in this position so many times. To win a big game, they've got to outscore their problems.
Mm-hmm.
And last year against Atlanta, you remember, they didn't outscore their problems in the end.
And the back line this year for the Herons, it seems like doesn't matter who you put back there. I mean, Jordi Alba is kind of like a pseudo attacking, you know, left back, midfield forward, wherever you want to put it, which means you've got to rotate folks over and you've got to kind of fade, or you've got that big gap space there. So the speed that anybody has coming down that right-hand side, you go over the top where Jordi Alba was, that means everybody has to rush over. And that back line for Inter Miami this year has been at times kind of like a cheese grater, or it's been, you know, like the, like when we would go to the Frontier Park when we're growing up as kids, and you sit there and you throw the mud and the rocks in, and you sit there and you sift it, and you're trying to figure out, you're trying to find the gold, and you end up with all of the mud underneath you and everything.
Yeah.
It literally is one of those situations where Maxi Falcone might have one of the best sets of lettuce in the league, but he gets run past a lot. You know, Tomas Avilas, he can be a walking yellow card. Chelo Weigand can be a walking yellow card. All of these things at the back that are causing issues with everybody going forward, you get caught in transition and it's all bets are off.
I think in the playoffs, Avilas gets on the field when there's no other option, okay? Because he's the one that really comes to mind when you talk about a play. What are the odds on him finishing a game against a good team if he plays a full 90? Yeah, well, all of that. But to your point about Alba, who I think at this final stage of his career will probably get forward as much as humanly possible to put his stamp on the game. Go back to those great Barcelona teams, John. Who was the player who covered that vacated space for Jordi Alba? Think hard about this one. You probably don't have to think hard. It was very often Javier Mascherano, who was sometimes a center back, a wonderful defensive midfielder, of course. But Alba went because a great player like Javier Mascherano would slide over and cover that vacated space. Their best option, in my opinion, in that setup is Noah Allen,
yep.
who like is a good young player for what it's worth. And I can't stand these lists personally. He's the one Miami player on the under 22 list. Don't get me started, but the league makes a big deal. And you know what? I shouldn't dismiss it. It is important, okay? Because what it is, it's an advertisement to the rest of the world, if nothing else. True. Look at this wonderful young talent that we have in our league. And if you haven't been paying enough attention, here it is. I get that. There are bigger issues with that back line, though. And I think good teams will expose that. They're just not comfortable, regardless of who's on the field, playing a high line. Falcone, I think, is maybe the best of the lot, but he's a lot better on the right side if Allen's on his left.
Yep.
Forgive me if I'm getting into the weeds a little bit here with this team, they're not going to be the Philadelphia Union and win games in that manner when push comes to shove. They're going to win games because great players are going to do great things. You're seeing, I think, good teams around the league missing some key parts as we approach the playoffs, too. Quinn Sullivan's a big loss for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And you probably tackled this earlier in the show before I came on. Kromoski has 5 goals at the Under-20 World Cup.
Yeah.
Now, he might not be an every-game starter for Inter Miami. I get that. But I think these playoffs very often become a war of attrition. Mm-hmm. And there's going to come a point in this postseason where Mascherano is going to look down and he's going to wish he had Kromoski to come into a game. And I think that's more likely to happen in a 120-minute game. And I think almost every team knows they're going to probably have to go through one of those once you get past that first round.
How bad a man is Rodrigo De Paul? He's a bad man.
Yeah, he is. And I get it, the whole messy bodyguard thing. He started out better than he's playing now, mm-hmm. if you're going to give the report card fairly, in my opinion. When he came in those first few weeks, and I think League's Cup is when he made his debut for this team. Correct me if I'm wrong. I might have the math wrong. A lot of these Miami games have been blending together. Forgive me. I think it's whatever it is, 21 of them or whatever. He was either the best player on the field or second or third best player on the field in that first 4 or 5 game stretch. He was giving you just enough offensively, standing next to Busquets in midfield. He was perfect. And it tailed off a little bit, and I guess some of that you can chalk up to fatigue. The teams played a lot of games. He was playing a lot of games coming over and starting out in midseason with his new team. He's one of those guys I'd kind of monitor carefully this weekend, because I don't think you can keep going to the well with him and expect the energy that you demand out of him at this point in the year. He wants to show well. We talk about Messi playing in a final World Cup. DePaul should be there, but let's not put him down in ink yet. He should be there, but he's got some things to accomplish between now and next June as well, I believe.
Steve Cangelosi hanging out with us here on a Freestyle Friday on SDHAM. Now we can circle back to Atlanta United.
Okay.
I'm going to pull the index card out in a second. Looks like Atlanta United is going to have maybe 12 or 13 first-team players. I think the roster assembly involving Atlanta United, 2 players coming up. I don't know off the top of my head who has short-term agreements left, how many matches they have left, what it could look like on the match day 18. This is going to be a jigsaw puzzle for Ronnie Dyla and the staff to try and figure out how to piece it together. It's going to be an interesting look, and it's going to be a look that folks that follow the twos will have some knowledge base in for everybody that's gone, and it's a lot of firepower that's gone. Bart Sleash is gone. Saba's gone. Alexi's gone. I mean, it's going to be an interesting watch.
Yeah, so this playing through the international window thing I know is getting old for a lot of people, but it affects different teams in different ways. Why, you mentioned a lot of the bullet points, and then you take a Luke Brennan out of the equation with the Under-20 World Cup. Cooper Sanchez is with the Under-17s. Where do I think that leaves them? I think it leaves them in a state of, I don't want to say confusion, but I think you're hesitant to kind of go out and try to play the same way that you played against LAFC the other night. And by that, I mean, I don't think they'll go out there and play all that conservatively and try to kill the game, because you're asking a lot of new players to come in. And that's a pretty hard thing to do, whether Messi is on the field or not. It's still going to be Alba. It's still going to be Suarez. It's still going to be Tadio Allende. You're going to have good players on the field. And the two names that you mentioned in particular that catch my attention, with no disrespect to the others, are taking Maranchuk and Almiron both out of the equation at the same time, because you're kind of taking your best two number 10s, if I can use that loosely, sure, out. So what does that mean? Maybe they try to play this a little bit more directly tomorrow night, John, and can they do that? Do we see Chade and Latte Lot start together? I could see that. I was trying to nail the Atlanta coaching staff down on just a tactical formation to look at tomorrow night. Are they tempted here with Mihai gone to go to four in the back? And it sounded as if they weren't really ready to commit to that either, although they certainly weren't dismissing the idea. This is a long way of me saying, I don't know how they're going to approach this game tomorrow night. I think they want to play it proudly. You've got two of these left before decision day. And before we get to Latte Lot, can we talk about the legend Brad Guzan here? Now, I'm reading the tea leaves and that Jaden Hibbert is probably going to play at Miami and get a seventh straight start. Probably.
Yep.
Decision day has to go to Guzan, right? It has to be a celebration of his career in Atlanta, even though, to my knowledge, there hasn't been a hint of a formal announcement that this is it for him. Yep. But it's not a game that has relevance in the table. And that, to me, is the selling point of decision day down in Atlanta. Someone who has accomplished what very few keepers in the history of the United States have ever accomplished. And for what it's worth, one of my favorite people in the league, too.
Yep. We were trying to piece it together and come up with an 11. We were thinking it was going to be Hibbert, Pedro, Barakal, Steon Gregerson. Keep an eye on the health of Brooks Lennon. What happens on the right-hand side? Is it Pedro flopping and DCQ on the left? You've got Alzate and Muyamba maybe as your two. And then your attack, is it Jamal and Latte Lot, and then trying to figure out how you want to work the edges? That was what we were kind of thinking.
It's not a bad guess. Alzate is a player that really has, I think, not caught a lot of people's attention yet, but talking to some people this week, it's going to be really interesting to see what he gives this team next year after a full training camp with this group.
Right.
Technical player, and we've seen this so many times in MLS, regardless of the position, right? Bradley Wright Phillips, when I was in New York, scored two goals after arriving from Europe that first season, arriving in midseason, and some people were saying, well, this one's not going to work. He wins a golden boot next year. Let's not go there with Alzate, but a good technical player, and the point that was driven home for me in talking to some people this week is that he's very good out of possession if you watch the entire 90 minutes. And he's going to be, I think, one of the cogs of this team if, and I expect them to get out of this mess 1 year from now. I would suspect that they're going to play with three center backs, but if you can help me on who the third one might be, Sesok might be somebody who can play that role. I don't know. It's a guessing game for me, too, 24 hours out.
I think Nick Sesok was listed as out for an injury.
Yeah, we get the official word later today in a couple of hours. John, that's fine, and I respect Atlanta United on what they want to put on the notes, but I've been fooled too many times where suddenly it changes 5 o'clock the night before the game. Let's see. Maybe I don't know.
You aren't kidding. I don't want to get you in trouble at the principal's office. I know you've got the upcoming meeting with Javier Mascherano. 30,000 feet, what kind of a match are you expecting coming up this weekend?
One that Miami should take very, very seriously, regardless of who is on the field. In this situation, you shouldn't have the weight of the world on your back when you're taking the field in this game. Obviously, you've been out of the playoff race for a long time right now. Go play. I expect goals in this game. You've got a wonderful young keeper who has made so many reactionary saves in the short amount of time that we've had to see him. He's going to have to answer the call, and he's probably going to have to make some plays tomorrow night. I expect it to be a lot more wide open than the LAFC game from an entertainment perspective. I hope that's the case. But I have a feeling I'm onto something when I project it that way. I can see this being a 3-2 or 3-3
wow.
game.
Okay, cool. Go to your meeting with Mascherano. I know that you've called 412 other Inter-Miami matches this season. Go ahead and prep for 413. We'll be keeping an eye on you. You know where the key is under the mat. You know where the garage door opener is. You now have the key to the castle. Come on and crash anytime on a Friday and vent your spleen. It's all good.
You are bookmarked now, my friend. Very good. Enjoy the balance of this season. I hope our paths cross again
soon.
You got it. Okay?
Steve Cangelosi, be well, my friend. All right, there you go. Steve Cangelosi, he's going to go talk to Javier Mascherano.
And always great to catch up with Steve and find out what's going on in his universe and let everybody else know what's going on in his universe as he gets ready to call Atlanta United and Messi and friends coming up this weekend in Fort Lauderdale. This is the best of SDHAM on the SDH Network. John Nelson here with you. Thanks for coming by and hanging out with us as you always do. As we mentioned, opposition research, because of everything that was being questioned about what the lineup was going to look like for Inter-Miami, we decided to see if we could track down the legendary beat writer for the Miami Herald, Michelle Kaufman, whose beat now does include her time with Inter-Miami and Messi and friends. And so we asked her some questions about Inter-Miami, about the season, about the build and the roster and expectations and all of that stuff leading into the weekend with Inter-Miami and Messi and friends taking on Atlanta United at the Erector Set on Saturday night. Here's our conversation with the Miami Herald's Michelle Kaufman.
We have a premiere here on the show. And like I said, the one thing I need is a trumpet fanfare or like Serpentina or something. And I don't have it yet. And I'm working on it. Like I said, we get the goal horn when we have watch-alongs. I added that. It's a small thing. And it's not a Florida Panthers goal horn. It's a Montreal Canadiens goal horn because we go back to the forum for all that kind of stuff. Now, we've got it for like 15 or 13 minutes. And I don't want to, because she's like really busy. Michelle Kaufman, Miami Herald, not wasting any more time. Bringing her in. We're going to say hi. We're going to talk anything and everything opposition research as Inter-Miami gets ready to host Atlanta United. Michelle, good morning. Thanks for dropping by.
Good morning. How are you?
Look, we got you. You were like choice 1, 2, 3, A, B, and C to discuss anything.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And everything going on with Inter-Miami, so I'm glad that we were able to corral the comet, otherwise known as Michelle Kaufman these days.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Yes.
Covering this team is not, I've been doing this for 38 years, and this is the very strangest beat that I've ever covered, I'll put it that way.
How strange is it?
It's so strange that Lionel Messi is the captain of this team. He's the captain of the team. He's, you know, he's the most famous player in the world, mm-hmm. captain of the team. And he has not spoken to the local media in over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Since August 17th of 2023, we had our opening press conference with him. That was 26 months ago. And he hasn't spoken to us ever since. And that just doesn't happen in not only in American sports, but even in MLS. But I mean, you know, the idea that LeBron James or Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes or whoever would just never speak to the reporters who cover the team day to day. It's it's very unusual, but that's where we're at. He's covering Messi is completely different. The beat completely changed the minute he got here. You know, on the good side is everybody's very interested. And, you know, I have a podcast myself that only came about because of Messi. The minute Messi came, the editor said, Michelle, you need to do a podcast now. So I do a weekly podcast, and we have listeners/viewers from 220 countries. Oh. So there are people that are writing me from places like Gabon, Sri Lanka, New Zealand. I mean, I'm looking at the map all the time just to see where are some of the countries of the people that are writing. The interest in him is massive. It's global. He has 506 million Instagram followers. 506 million. LeBron James has 148 million. So, you know, and like Patrick Mahomes has 6 million. Mm-hmm. This man has 506 million.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
506. 506.
506 million, 506, half a billion people. Half a billion people are interested in Lionel Messi to the point that they follow him on Instagram. So the beat changed completely. You know, we have security measures in place to go to training that we never had before. I used to just waltz in there. It was usually, you know, me and maybe two or three other people. We would just walk in, we would chit chat with Phil Neville, talk about his family. He would ask us about our kids. He would let me stay sometimes and watch the training if there wasn't anyone else there. No, it's completely different. We have to RSVP in advance. We have to apply to attend training, RSVP. Then there's a security guard. We go through metal detector. We get a wristband to go to training. So, yeah, it's a crazy beat. This is a long answer, but this is a crazy beat.
Understood. The Jordi Alba retirement, how much of a shock was that to the dynamic of covering Inter Miami and to the club futures itself?
Yeah, I mean, that was a big shock, to be honest, because he just signed a contract extension in May. And, you know, there were quotes from him saying, oh, I'm so happy here. I want to stay a couple more years. I'm still in good form. I'm enjoying. I want to lift a lot of more trophies and whatever. And then Sergio Busquets retired a couple weeks ago, and that one was a little more expected. He had not re-signed yet. He had not signed a contract extension. And, you know, there had been some talk that he was going to want to retire and, you know, take some time off and then become a coach. Everyone says he's going to be a great coach. He's basically a coach on the field already. He loves teaching the younger guys, and he takes them under his wing. He's a mentor. He's just the consummate pro. We were just talking to Yannick Bright about him the other day, and he said, if he were my coach, I would run through walls for him. He said, he's just so professional. He's the first person at every meeting. He said, he's literally the first guy to show up at every meeting. He's never late for anything, never late for the bus, never late for a meeting. He is very helpful to the younger guys. He said he even scolds him about what he eats. Sometimes in the cafeteria, he will point out to some of the other players that maybe what they're eating isn't as healthy, or that their portions are too big or whatever. So anyway, that one was a little more expected and not surprising. Jordi Alba is playing really well. He just scored 2 goals the other day. He's a left back. Mm-hmm. He's a left back. He has 13 assists this season, which is second only to Messi. Messi has 17. Jordi Alba has 13 assists, and he's a defensive back. He's a, you know, left back. So he's playing really well. He's at the top of his game. He still has speed. He's actually one of the quicker guys on this team that does not have too much speed, but Jordi Alba is one of the faster guys, even at 36. And the fact that he just signed a contract extension. So that one was a very big surprise, yes.
Then you look at the back line for this matchup coming up with Atlanta United. And I know I'm drifting in and out of thoughts and questions, too, because I've got like 98 questions for you. The back line, how much of a concern is it for Javier Mascherano? Consistently, is it a question for Javier Mascherano? And then coming into this matchup, I guess, what are his concerns so far?
Yeah, the defense in the back line has been, the defense in general and the back line, and defense particularly in transition. The majority of the goals that they get, they score a lot of goals. They have scored 68 goals, which is more than any team in MLS. So they're the leading scoring team in the league. So you would think that the leading scoring team in the league would be in first place, but they also give up a lot of goals. They're among the lower teams in the Eastern Conference as far as goals conceded. And a lot of those goals have been in transition. They, and Javier Mascherano and the players talk about it, you know, they play a very attacking style. And this was the case with Tata also. They play a very attractive attacking style. Everyone loves to watch it. It's beautiful to watch. They pass a lot. They possess. Excuse me. But they're high up the field a lot because they're always in attack mode. Even Jordi Alba, as a left back, is always streaking up the left side, and that leaves a gigantic space in back in which they're vulnerable. So that's on Jordi's side. But in general, the team is an attacking team. They don't have too much speed. So when they get caught in transition and they lose the ball, if they lose the ball high up the field and the other team has speed, you can always see the Inter Miami players chasing. They end up getting outnumbered. And that is where a lot of their goals are conceded. So, you know, he's moved around people on the back line. He's not had a consistent pairing in the middle. Maxi Falcone has been a constant, and he's been very good. He provides leadership. He's a tough guy. He's really good. So he's pretty much started most of the games. But then the other center back has been rotated. It's been Gonzalo Lujan. Sometimes Noah Allen plays there. They like Noah Allen, but Noah Allen is a left back, but Jordi Alba is a left back. So sometimes they play Jordi at left back. They put Noah Allen as a center back with Maxi. Sometimes it's Lujan. Sometimes it's Toto Aviles and Lujan. Sometimes it's Toto Aviles and Maxi. So they don't have a really set pairing in the middle. So I think that that's been a bit of a problem. They don't have the consistency. And also just in general, most of their goals are given up in transition. So it's not even necessarily the fault of the back line. It's the fault of the midfielders who don't have the speed and the defenders who don't have the, you know, it's just not a fast team. It's a high scoring, attractive team with a lot of stars, but they don't have speed. They're older and they don't have speed. I mean, Sergio Busquets is brilliant. He's a genius, but he's not fast.
No. Seven absences going into this international window. Noah Allen, Rodrigo De Paul, Ian Frey, Messi, Santi Morales, Telasco Segovia, and Matteo Silvetti, who scored yesterday for Argentina in the U-20s. There's talk that Messi might be returning for the weekend and coming back for the rest of the window. What's the latest on the absences and possible returns for the stretch run here?
Yeah, I mean, the big question, the really big question is Messi. He's been training all week so far with the Argentina national team. They're training at the Inter Miami training facility. They're playing Friday night against Venezuela at Hard Rock Stadium here. And then they were supposed to go to Chicago for a game on Monday against Puerto Rico. And that game is being moved here. They're saying because of demonstrations on the streets of Chicago. I also think the tickets weren't doing great, the ticket sales. That may also be a factor. Whatever the case or a combination of factors, it looks like that game is going to be played at Chase Stadium in Fort Lauderdale on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So the big question is, will Lionel Messi play for Argentina Friday night against Venezuela, or is he going to skip that game and play against Atlanta? Now, going into the FIFA window, everybody just assumed he's going to play for Argentina. He always picks country. He loves the Argentina national team. But it is a friendly. The game against Atlanta is important. This team is in third place, but there are two teams breathing down their necks right now, Charlotte and NYCFC, and they want to finish as high as they can. They want to get home field advantage in the playoffs. They want to have as high a seating as they can. Even though last year, you know what happened because you're Atlanta.
Yes.
They were the top seed and they lost to Atlanta in the opening round. But They don't want a repeat of that, but they really do want to finish strong. And so it is an important game. This Atlanta game is a very important game to Inter Miami. They want to finish strong. They want to win an MLS Cup. They've had a chance to win four trophies this year. They have not won any of the other three. This is it. This is all they have now. They're already out of the Supporters Shield race, which they won last year. They lost in the final of the League's Cup. They lost in the semifinals of the Champions Cup. They made it to the knockout round of the Club World Cup, but they got knocked out there, which was expected by PSG. So now there's only one trophy in their reach, and that's MLS Cup. And they really, really want it. And especially with Busquets, with Busi and Jordi retiring, they would love nothing more than to send those two guys off with a trophy. You know, beautiful photo it would be of all those Barcelona boys holding up one last trophy. You know, that's how they want this movie to end. And they don't want to, you know, they don't want to limp into the playoffs. So I would not be surprised, especially because they, no one has said for sure. But I will tell you that Mascherano has been very noncommittal and vague about who's going to be available on Saturday. And more importantly, Scaloni, the Argentina coach, has said, well, you know, we're going to talk to Leo and see how he's feeling, because he has played 90 full minutes, seven games in a row over 21 days, which is true. He's played seven games, 90 minutes over 21 days, and he's 38 years old. So Scaloni said, if anyone, you know, we don't want to risk anything. If anyone is tired, if they're fatigued, we're not going to play them. It's a friendly. Well, they could presume, they could say, you know, Messi is fatigued. He's been playing seven games in 21 days, even though it's just one more day of rest to play versus Atlanta. But that would be the narrative. The narrative would be he's tired. He needs an extra day of rest. Plus, Inter Miami has an important game on Saturday against Atlanta. So we're just going to let him skip this game. And then guess what? The other game, how convenient. It was moved to Chase Stadium. Unbelievable demonstrations in Chicago. The game was moved to Chase Stadium and has not been officially reported, but it is going to happen. That would be on Tuesday. Messi would have a few days. And you know what? He could put in an appearance for the Argentine national team on Tuesday. He could show up on the bench Friday. He could stand there and be present at Hard Rock Stadium for the game against Venezuela, but not go in the game, play Saturday against Atlanta, and then play against Puerto Rico, which will be an easier game, honestly, against a not a such a strong rival as Venezuela, on Tuesday at their home at Chase Stadium, 10 minutes from where he lives. So it could all work out for Mr. Messi the way it always seems to.
All right, go ahead and hit the promo for me. Everything that we've always wanted to know about Inter Miami and we're afraid to ask, you always have the answers. Let everybody know where they can catch up with you and read all your stuff, listen to all your stuff, all the things.
Right. Well, I write for the Miami Herald. I've been covering soccer for 36 years. Unbelievable. This will be my seventh World Cup coming up.
Wow.
Anyway, you can read me at MiamiHerald.com. On Twitter, I'm at Kauf Sports, K-A-U-F Sports, at Kauf Sports. And yeah, I have a podcast called Inside Inter Miami from the Miami Herald. It runs every Wednesday. So feel free to jump in on that. It's on YouTube, it's on Spotify, it's on Apple, wherever you catch your podcasts. And I'm everywhere. I'm all over the place.
Yes, you are. And we've seen you everywhere and we've seen you all over the place. So this is an actual fact. Michelle, thank you for dropping by for Opposition Research. You answered the questions that were burning in folks' minds, especially in this footprint. You now know where the key is under the mat. You now know where the garage door opener is under the stairs. If you ever want to come in and crash, vent your spleen on a Friday, sit there and go Intel or anything like that, you now know how to drop in. Come by anytime and you know I'll be knocking on your door soon. Thanks for dropping by.
That'd be great. By the way, how about the news that Tata looks like is going to end up back in MLS? I mean, you know,
I know
they loved him in Atlanta. We loved him in Miami. And what a great opportunity that would be for LAFC to replace Tarantolo with Tata, who loves MLS. He really does love coaching here. And he did a great job in Atlanta, clearly. And he did an outstanding job here. they were on top of the league the entire season, even with Messi missing 2.5 months. Mm-hmm. He missed 2.5 months last year, and Tata kept that team on top. They lost to Atlanta in the first round, but that, in my opinion, that was not Tata's fault. That was an amazing performance by Atlanta. Brad Guzan played out of his mind.
He did.
The Miami Stars did not really play like stars in that series, partly because of Atlanta, but partly they were off. But I think it would be great to have Tata back in MLS. I think that would be a wonderful hire.
You get him out there in LA with Yeonmin Son and Denny Bouanga and all that firepower. Yes. That would be a treat for the Western Conference to finally get to see what we've seen in the Eastern Conference for a very long time. If that does come to pass, I'm looking forward to it. And obviously, you know, we're going to be keeping an eye on that too. Like I said, don't be a stranger. It was fantastic to be able to catch up with you, because we saw you here for the Club World Cup and we're like, yes, we need to make sure that we add Michelle to the stacks of folks that we can talk to on a timely basis for things like this. Do not be a stranger.
All right, great. Good
to see you.
Take care. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Michelle Coffin, Miami Herald. And like I told Michelle when she came in, I literally said, you're like our choice A, B, and C for anything and everything Inter Miami. And I was glad that we were able to catch up with her and get the opposition research, because that Messi question is the burning question. And Michelle laid all of it out for you, where it could be, you know, he stands and does the palatial wave, the imitation palatial wave from the sidelines for the first friendly for Argentina. And then all of a sudden, magically, he pops up. Hey, he's in pink on the weekend for the matchup with Atlanta United.
Two interviews down, one to go, and thanks for hanging out with us here, as you always do, on the Off the Work podcasting section at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. John Nelson here with you for the best of SDHAM. And our third interview this week is a bit of a crossover with the Red Clay Soccer Report that we have on the network. And it's an opportunity for us to kind of dive into all of the other action that's going on in and around the state when it comes to men's and women's soccer on the collegiate side. And this time we got to stop it.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. PNC's apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
To Albany State University and find out what it's like for head coach Jared Bieschamp to build a program from the ground up and continue to get progression, as we've seen with Albany State University, as they are fighting in one of the toughest conferences in the country when it comes to collegiate soccer. Here's our conversation with Coach Bieschamp to find out what's going on as the growth continues at Albany State. First off, Coach, thanks for dropping by here and letting everybody know what's going on in the red clay down there at Albany State. Thanks for being a part of the show.
No problem. Glad to be on.
When it comes to the Peach Belt, let me ask it this way. How tough is it? Because I know a lot of folks may be locked into like Division One and such. They may look at SoCon. They may look at Sun Belt, things like that. When it comes to the Peach Belt and Division Two, how tough is the Peach Belt Conference?
I personally think the Peach Belt Conference is probably one of the top in the nation for women's soccer. Just last year alone, we had four of our teams make it to the national tournament. Three of them made it out of the first round. The competition week in and week out from the top to bottom is going to be a competitive week.
What has it been like for you to build the program down there at Albany State? And what have you learned, I guess, about yourself and building a program in the process?
It's been challenging. I came in the year after COVID. They had a lot of international players during that time where they couldn't get into the country. So it was basically kind of starting everything over and fresh. With that, and then being in the Peach Belt with that tough competition week in and week out, You know, it's definitely been challenging, but each year we've been seeing a progression. You know, the improvement throughout the squad, whether it's practice games, has been getting better and better each year. So it's good that we get to see the hard work come into fruition, and what we've been doing. We've been doing it kind of the right way, both on and off the field.
When you mention the off the field component there, when you have the players assemble the way that they have, what are you trying to do off the field to gain awareness, get more folks to sit there and watch the product, be out there in the community? What are the off the field stuff? What's the off the field stuff that you're doing to help grow the program in addition to the competition there in the Peach Bowl?
Yeah, I'm just trying to have the girls get involved in the community and stuff. You know, getting a lot of people out to come see women's soccer game. It's a little bit more challenging than football. So, you know, letting them know we're out here. We have two campuses as well. So that can be kind of challenging. But, you know, having them with the local soccer club in town, which is UFA, South Georgia. I had them do some stuff with Boys and Girls Club in the past. There's been a new thing in Albany where people have been getting together Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturday mornings in downtown and just going for a community run. So in preseason, rather than doing our 6 a.m. fitness, we went out there and joined the community and got our fitness in that way. So just some little things to get their faces out there and people to get to see who they are. Just not as Albany State soccer players, but, you know, as the young adults coming up in this community.
And at the same time, you look at your roster and you're getting to build that roster here. There's a lot of Georgia talent there. I mean, we both know that there's a lot of talent here in the state of Georgia, and you're getting that talent to stay home to help you build that program down there at Albany State.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Atlanta area has really good soccer. And then, you know, with us being in South Georgia, getting to like Tallahassee and those Florida areas, Tampa Bay is pretty close to us. Just kind of getting as close players in this area as we can. You know, we do have a couple girls coming from across country from Colorado. I've had girls from Utah in the past and everything, but you know, you can find a lot of talent in the Florida and Georgia area.
So. What's it been like when you're trying to recruit, and you mentioned to those players in Colorado? I know that one of them, if I'm not mistaken, transferred in from Mississippi Valley, so the knowledge base is there. But when you're trying to recruit outside of the South Georgia and the Georgia footprint, what are those conversations like when you're trying to sit there and get folks interested in what you're building down there at Albany State?
You know, I just try to show them the campus, you know, get them on. We have a really nice facilities here for Division II. The city of Albany has everything you need as well. You know, not a big city like Atlanta, but it still has stuff you can do when you're not bored in town. And then kind of just telling them about the program we're trying to do and build and trying to have them be a part of that. And then also I throw in a little bit of the weather as well during winter time and it's good to go.
Yeah, I could definitely see where it's like, well, you know what? Short of the freakish snowstorm that creates itself in the Gulf and works its way and collides with a cold front that happens like once every 20,000 years or something. Yeah, it's going to be a lot better down there than it would be in other places, unless you really want to play football with the orange ball in the snow. Let me ask you this. What is it like within the framework of HBCU to be one of those programs that is building a women's soccer program in Division II in HBCU? Do you have feedback and do you have regular conversations with other HBCUs about how they're building their programs? What's it like for you within the HBCU framework to build?
You know, the one issue that we have is, you know, the rest of our athletic is in the SIAC. So we don't actually get to see a lot of those teams. A lot of our colleges that have women's soccer, they're not in conferences or they're located in a different one. So it's a little bit challenging on that aspect of it. But the HBCU is getting talks about, you know, more women's soccer teams coming up and everything. So hopefully it just keeps on building. And, you know, we can kind of start something as a conference as well.
What would you say? So if I was to walk up to you with a megaphone, not just a microphone, but a megaphone, and I would ask you to just shout out into the ether the benefits for HBCU to have women's soccer programs and go into the sports that they may not necessarily have thought of in the past, but build in that way. What would you say the benefits have been to have a women's soccer program inside an HBCU framework?
I mean, just getting the talent in here, giving them the opportunity. You know, the culture life of a HBCU it's been amazing down here. The community aspect of everyone getting involved. So, you know, it definitely has its perks of that type of support and community in it.
I know that you have a to-do list about the growth of the program, and I don't know where it is. It could be on a Google Doc someplace with your coaches and the athletic department. Could be on a big dry erase board, you know, like one of those big 6-foot by 20-foot things that hangs around in an office someplace, and it's got a bunch of ideas written on it and a bunch of arrows and different colors and things like that. When it comes to the next steps in building the program there at Albany State, where is this to-do list of yours? And what do you think the next thing that you can cross off the list is as you continue to build the program down there at Albany State?
I mean, the next step that we need to take is continue to grow that depth that we need. You know, this is probably the biggest squad I've had. The competition in training has gotten a lot better as well. So, you know, we're having the ability to, you know, if someone's not playing well, to look down that sideline and have options where the level's not dropping. We still got to improve on that. But, I mean, I think that's that next step of crossing off is getting that depth that we need in order to compete at this level.
I mean, if my math is right, I think 15 of your players are underclassmen this year, sophomores and freshmen. And so I think there's a lot that you can build from that with the continuity aspect where you mention all of the numbers that you have. I'm sitting here trying to do math quickly and go, okay, so you're probably what, a roster of say what, 24? Is that safe?
Yeah, we have about 23 girls on. So.
And so with a roster of 23 and 15 of them being underclassmen, obviously there's a lot of room for growth there in this with all of these things that you mentioned. You got players from transferring in from Florida. You got players who are born in Colorado. How did the conversation go with Leira Nahara when you were getting her from Parkland Community College, where she's from La Rioja, Spain? What were those conversations like with her getting her from Parkland CC to be with you there at Albany State?
You know, I used to coach at Iowa Central, JUCO level and stuff. We played Parkland quite a bit for non-conference games. So I kind of knew the standard. I knew the level and everything. So, you know, getting her on board, you know, we needed our goalkeeper transferred out last year. We needed a new one. And just the quality she brings in with the ball at her feet as well, just not as a shot stopper, being able to kind of play out of the back, which I've been trying to do for a few years now. It definitely was just kind of selling her on the project. And, you know, I think we did a Skype call where I walked around with my phone, showing her the facilities and everything, just so she could kind of see what we had to offer as well, with that. So.
Matchup coming up against Middle Georgia State in Albany coming up on Saturday before hitting the road for Southern Wesleyan in Central, South Carolina. It's the name of the town. It is Central, South Carolina. Not Central, South Carolina, but Central, South Carolina. And then Georgia College coming up in Milledgeville a week from Saturday. When it comes to the squad, time to brag on the squad a little bit. Who are some of the players
that you have seen grow and evolve in their time this season, whether it's the 15 underclassmen or the juniors and you just have the one senior. So of the 8 upperclassmen and the 15 underclassmen, who are some of the folks that we would naturally gravitate toward when it comes to standouts there at Albany State this year?
I mean, the freshmen have definitely been a great group of girls. They've stepped up a lot, getting playing time as well. So, you know, that transition from the high school and club getting into the college level, the ability for some of them just to step up right away has been tremendous. Liera, like you said, from Parkland, she had a amazing game the other day versus North Georgia with some of the saves she's done. So it's definitely been a progression with her. And then, you know, upperclassmen, you know, the leadership between Jordan and Gabby, they both have kind of different styles of it, but the growth they have shown being captains and leading the squad and trying to keep them motivated has been really, really good. So,
and we can't thank you enough for dropping by and hanging out with us to give us the education on Albany State and everything going on down there in the Peach Belt. Coach, we're going to be keeping an eye on you, what's going on as you continue to build the program. Thanks for dropping by the Red Clay Report, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Perfect. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks, as always, to Coach Beauchamp for breaking it down for us and giving us the education as to what's been going on there at Albany State as they are a member of the Peach Belt and a proud HBCU. So it was great to catch up with him and find out how the sport has continued to grow down there in South Georgia. As always, once again, preparations for every single week are going to be here for SDHAM. Once again, the best of SDHAM here at 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. And it's always a fun conversation to kind of recap the week and find out the steps that we've been on and gone through to get to where we are right now. So as always, once again, follow, like, be a part of the conversation as best you can on all of the social media platforms that we have. You can go to Instagram. You can go to the 280 character app. You can go to Blue Sky. You can go to Facebook. Like, friend, be a part of our conversation there as much as you can every single day, 24/7, 365. So once again, that's another go round of the best of SDHAM here on the SDH Network for all of us here at the SDH Network. Jason, Maddie, Sophia, Nick, Jarrett, and me. I'm just John. Thanks for dropping by and being a part of things on the SDH Network, and thanks for being a part of SDHAM. Mucha Plata, y'all. Play it safe. We'll catch up with you soon.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.